With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Top Order Podcast. This Week in Cricket covers a whole cornucopia of cricket from around the world this week. We've got Quinton de Kock's antics to run out Fakhar Zaman for 193. We've got the Australian Women's World Record. Craig Braithwaite still rocking those sunglasses. Washington Sundar's named his dog Gabba, for goodness sake. The DRS is going to include Bales, of all things. And we talk a little bit about IPL injuries and withdrawals. All coming up on This Week in Cricket. Stay tuned. So, guys, before we get to the New Zealand summer and wrapping that up, it's decidedly autumnal here in Auckland, although we're all still in shorts and T-shirts, which is pretty good. But we've got a few bits and pieces, a few antics going on around the world of cricket. We'll talk about Craig Brathwaite's sunglasses, but let's start with Quinton de Kock. What do we think?
Yeah, well, so if, I guess for anyone who hasn't seen it, there's probably by the time this episode comes out, it might be a little bit old news. We've got Raj banging on his microphone over there, which has confused me. But anyway, we've got Quinton de Kock has come under a bit of controversy for the way a run out has happened. Fakhar Zaman has been run out, Quinton de Kock is pointing to the bowler's end. Fakhar Zaman thinks the ball's not coming to his end. Aidan Markram, great throw, hits the stumps, and Zaman is out while he's just dawdling back into his crease. What do we think about it, boys?
For 193.
I know, yeah. We should have mentioned
the
that.
Highest ever ODI chasing score. Incredible.
What's the law say?
So the law that could apply here is law 41.5. And 41.5.1 states that it is unfair for any fielder willfully to attempt by word or action to distract, deceive, or obstruct either batsman after the striker has received the ball. 45.2 says it is for either one of the umpires to decide whether any distraction, deception, or obstruction is willful or not. And in that case, the umpires, if they choose to take action, law 41.5.3 comes into effect. If either umpire considers that a fielder has caused or attempted to cause such a distraction, deception, or obstruction, he/she shall immediately call and signal dead ball and inform the other umpire of the reason for that call. Then 5 penalty runs are awarded to the batting side in addition to any runs scored off that delivery, and the batting side gets to choose who faces the next ball, and the ball is re-bowled.
Raj, I can see you've got an opinion on this.
I actually don't have a strong opinion. It's probably funny that I asked for the law there, but I think that this has more to do with the spirit of cricket than anything else, to be honest. I don't think, look, let's boil this down. I don't think that this actually had anything to do with the eventual result of the game. I think that the game was probably gone by that stage.
Yeah, so in the context of that, Pakistan needed 31 runs off the last six balls, and they fell 14 short.
Mm.
I think it's a bit of a dick move by Quinton de Kock, but look, I'm not massively up in arms about it. Like, I think there are a few of us around the table here, but I do think it was a dick move from on his part.
Yeah, look, I mean, I was a keeper back in the day, and boy, I was a prick at times on the field. But yeah, as you said, Raj, it's a spirit of cricket thing. I think there was a similar thing, or not a similar thing, but Johnny Bairstow faked Steve Smith in an Ashes test not too long ago, where the ball was nowhere near Steve Smith, but he was running to the keeper's end, and Bairstow shaped as if he's going to take the bails off to make Smith dive into his crease. He's got a face full of popping crease, and sort of stood up, and Bairstow's just laughing away. That in a day's test cricket's probably, you know, trying to entertain yourself. And I still thought that was pretty off key. But this was just, there was no way that he was signalling the fielder. He was doing it to try and put Zaman off. And yeah, the result's kind of really irrelevant. It just really is not a great move, not in the spirit of the game, particularly at the state of the game as well. What was the point?
I think also, I feel like if you're the batsman, if you're a fucker, you've got to be grumpy at yourself for not making ground.
Yeah.
You've got to take that on yourself. Yep. We can't have this sort of snowflake sort of society that we've got going on a little bit here. He's got to take that on himself. He didn't make his ground.
And to be fair to him, he did
that afterwards. Yeah.
And he didn't know where the ball was. So that's 100% on him. Yeah, that's where I sit on that.
But you think about the fake fielding. I assume that law came in
2017.
Yeah, because people were doing those slides in the outfield, right? They were sliding before the ball had even got to the fielder on the boundary. They would slide at the 30-meter circle, pretending that they'd already got it.
Yep.
There's so many things going on when you're running. How do you actually take into account all the things that are going on? Because you want to check that your partner's being run out, or you're trying to be aware of where the ball is. That's kind of what you're told when you're running, isn't it? Be aware of where the ball is, not just run,
yeah,
because you want to see what's going on.
Yeah, so two things happened there in the running between the wickets that was poor cricket from Pakistan's point of view. Fakhar Zaman was watching his batting partner, which is a no-no. You should be running to the far end and running hard to make your ground and not give up no matter where the ball is. The partner running to the danger end, as soon as he saw the throw leave the hand, should have been calling, your end, your end, your end. There is no way that he should not have known that the ball was coming to his end, and there's no way that he shouldn't have been running as hard as he can. So there's two pieces of poor cricket there from Pakistan in terms of their running between wickets. I agree with you, Raj. I think it was a willful piece of distracting the batsman. I think in the terms of the way that the law is worded, that was willful from Quinton de Kock. And two things make me think that. One is that the ball had long left the bowler's arm when he was still pointing at the bowler's end. And two, when the run out was effected, he pointed to the batsman and laughed as the batsman was walking off. And that tells me not that, like, if that was an accident, he would have gone, holy crap, what just happened? I can't believe that just happened. But he knew exactly what he was doing. And then in the press conference, Temba Bavuma sold him down the river and said, hey, that was a clever piece of cricket from de Kock, wasn't it? In those kind of situations, you're looking for any way you can get a wicket, any edge you can get, and that was a clever piece of cricket from Quinny. And so that tells me that that was willful in the moment and should have been penalised as a result, regardless of the spirit of cricket side of things, and I tend to agree with both of you on that point.
You saw the reaction of the fielders as well. They were laughing at that situation. So, you know, they knew that they'd done that. But we've probably spent enough time on this, haven't
I think. I think this we can reference the last episode. The walking between the wickets is something only Chris Gayle can do.
Exactly.
So I don't know what Fakhar was up to.
Yep. Well, in fairness, Fakhar is on 193.
He's
probably a touch fatigued, shall we say.
An incredible innings from him, by the way, as well. Well done.
Bordy, let's talk this Australian women's world record. I mean, yeah, no superlatives are enough for this feat.
No, Australia in the first one-day international in Mount Maunganui over the Easter weekend here defeated New Zealand for their 22nd consecutive one-day international victory. And to put that in perspective, that's a record that goes back to the 29th of October 2017 when Australia were last defeated in an ODI. That's only 12 days short of 3.5 years since they were last defeated in an ODI. They've beaten New Zealand 7 times. They've beaten Sri Lanka, the West Indies, Pakistan, India and England 3 times each. So they've beaten everybody in that streak over 22 games. I'll just going to run off a couple of stats because I love a good stat. And when I was researching this, I was surprised how many runs and wickets Australia got. Alyssa Healy, 1,197 runs in 20-odd games and an average of 57. Rachel Haynes averages 41. Meg Lanning averages 53.8. Elise Perry averages 66.5. And Beth Mooney averages 45.8 in their top five batters.
Handy.
Jess Jonathan is 39 wickets at 13. Megan Schutt averages 18. Elise Perry averages 19. Ash Gardner averages 20. Sophie Molyneux averages 9.8. And Delissa Commence averages 13.5 in their bowling attack. That is just incredible. And one thing that jumped off the page at me immediately is the plus-minus between Perry's batting average and bowling average. Elise Perry as a cricketer is plus 47.1 batting to bowling average over that period of time. And over her career, plus 28.67. I want to put that in perspective. Of the players in that time in the men's game, that have taken made 500 runs and taken 20 wickets. Shakib Al Hassan is plus 30. Elise Perry is plus 47. The next highest is Jimmy Neesham, who's plus 6.9. Oh, and Williams from Zimbabwe is plus 8. And Ben Stokes is plus 4. They're the only other male cricketers in the world over that period who are in the positive, who have 500 runs and 20 wickets. All time, Jacques Callis is plus 12. Viv Richards is plus 11. Lance Klusner is plus 11. Flintoff is plus 7. And Imran is plus 6. Elise Perry is plus 28.
Remarkable, isn't it?
It is beyond belief how good that Australian team is against all comers and how good Elise Perry is. And none of them get enough credit. And that blew my mind when I looked at that today. And look, congratulations to the Australian team. That is an incredible record. They may go on and win the next two against New Zealand. If they do, they'll stretch it to 24. And who knows beyond that. And just incredible.
I don't want to – you've painted such a wonderful picture there. I'm not going to add too much other than to say that just the depth in their squad is remarkable as well. That you look at the way that a lot of their players can kind of bat from opening down to 9-10 in some games, and they're just all interchangeable. So many of them can bowl. When you're naming all those stats and averages, there's six or seven bowlers there that are averaging under 20. So it's remarkable, and you know, we'll touch on them probably a little bit more when we look at the White Ferns season. But yeah, very, very impressive.
Yeah, just incredible.
Craig Brathwaite, Sonny's doing a good job in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, he's doing well. There must be a prescription. Right? No one's called it and told us. He batted really well. I think that he's doing a great job leading Zimbabwe.
Yeah, he is.
He's doing a great job leading the West Indies.
Yeah, you fired him up. Ever since I gave him a bit of a serve and you came to his defence, he's been outstanding. 150 in the second innings, is that right?
80-odd, I think, in the second innings.
Incredible. Well done. A great start to his captaincy career.
Yeah, couldn't get the wins, though. Two couple of draws. I think you were saying last episode, Raj, that the pitches have just been a bit flat there. But, yeah, very impressive to be scoring that many runs with sunglasses on.
Yeah, I think actually that second game, West Indies really did dominate in the second test. Mm. However, couldn't get those wickets at the end, and it doesn't matter if you can't get 20 wickets, does it? But I think I also wanted to point out, interestingly enough, do you think it's weird how they always focus on Mickey Arthur? I don't know if you've watched much of that series. I watched a lot of that series, but they're focusing on Mickey Arthur and his reactions. I like a coach that's passionate. You know my feelings on Mickey Arthur. I've made that quite clear. Mm. But I like a coach that's passionate. It's like in the NRL. They always show the coaches that get the angriest.
Bellamy, Ricky Stewart.
I don't know why they need to do that, but anyway.
Mm. TV. Mm.
It's an entertainment product, isn't it?
Talking of entertainment products, Washington Sundar, is he trolling Australian cricket? He's named his dog Gabba after the venue of his test debut.
I think it's brilliant. That is brilliant. It's clearly a happy memory for him, and he's clearly named it after a happy memory. I don't think we should read too much into it and say that he's deliberately trolling the Australian cricket team. I don't think he's given them that much attention, to be fair.
You don't think this is Ravi Ashwin tagging Tim Payne on Twitter and giving Nathan Lyon a nice jersey for his 100th test?
You're reading far too much into otherwise well-intended behaviours. I think it's great.
Well, look, let's not take the gloss off Baldy's Australian moment in this week in cricket. So let's move on. We've got IPL injuries and withdrawals as the next thing on the list, because we've got probably the lengthiest one we'll leave until last. But Josh Hazlewood and Mitchell Marsh join Josh Felipe with bio-bubble fatigue, which I think is the vernacular that's being used. Shreyas Iyer has confirmed shoulder injury, so Rishabh Pant, now the captain of his franchise. And then, unfortunately, and I guess we've got to mention this, India recorded 89,000 new cases of COVID on April the 2nd, India being the fifth worst hit country in the world at the moment. And that includes Devdutt Padukal and Akshar Patel, both testing positive for COVID. So, yeah, what are our thoughts on that little sort of schmozzle that's going on?
Well, I think the first thing that we've got to do is wish both Devdutt Padukal and Akshar Patel a speedy recovery from COVID, and everyone in India who's suffering at the moment, we wish them a speedy recovery as well. What impact do we think this is likely to have on those teams in particular? So Devdutt Padukal, RCB, Akshar Patel, Delhi Caps, I believe.
Yeah.
And what do we think the impact's going to be on those teams and on the tournament in general?
The other thing to add as well, I think, is there's 8 Mumbai groundsmen that have also tested positive with COVID this week as well. So,
okay.
You know, that throws
a speedy recovery to them as well.
Yeah, speedy recovery to them. But again, a cat amongst the pigeons for one of the venues that's obviously hoping to host a lot of that IPL.
Mm.
The RCB one, I actually was thinking about that today, because they've got a ready-made replacement there in Finn Allen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since our last podcast, he's gone on and he's scored a few runs. He's batted really well and he's got some real raw power. So I think that may give him an opportunity. I think the biggest issue with COVID is what happens with the grounds, what happens with where they're playing and where the tournament is being held.
Well, match 2, Delhi Capitals, Chennai Super Kings, April 10th is at Wankhede Stadium in Mumbai, as far as the official schedule goes at the moment.
Yeah, I saw Ganguly today saying, you know, that they're planning to go ahead as scheduled and all that kind of stuff at the moment, which is obviously you can do it at this point, but we've seen how these things spiral and how quickly things can change. And I have seen that they've also got Hyderabad as another venue kind of on standby. So
yeah.
I think it's going to be a watch this space sort of the whole tournament. And you know, you've seen in the NBA, for example, that's going on at the moment, you see situations where a team gets an outbreak of COVID and 4 or 5 of their players suddenly are just sitting out for 2 weeks.
Yep.
And it impacts their squad.
Or their games are postponed.
Yep.
And have to be played later. So just for listeners who might not be aware, Wankhede Stadium at the moment is scheduled to host 4 games in that first, it might even be 5 games in that first week of the tournament. Matches on the 10th, the 12th, 15th and 16th, yeah. So in that first 8 days of the tournament, that stadium's scheduled to host 4 games at this stage. So let's hope that can go ahead, or they can find a replacement venue pretty quickly, I should say.
I think you can draw some parallels here to what the NFL did during this COVID-ravaged time. That they played through it, and I didn't hear much in terms of consternation from the public around it. There were a few games that were postponed days, I'm not talking weeks, they were postponed and then they were still played. They didn't even have bubbles. They weren't playing, they weren't really in bubbles either, which it's hard to do with, you know, 200 staff in each team, staff and players. But I feel like that's going to be something similar to what we're going to see with the IPL.
I think what you'll also see is that, you know, I think the Indian public would wholeheartedly want the tournament to go ahead. You know, it is such a passion for them. So I think in other scenarios, and I think one of the things with the Premier League soccer in the UK, I don't know about the NFL, was the availability of COVID tests. That was a reason that South Africa cited, as, you know, we couldn't test our domestic cricketers. You know, we couldn't have the same sort of protocols. I would think the Indian public would be behind as many tests as necessary being diverted to try and keep the Indian Premier League on, because, you know, it is something that's going to be so watched on TV and part of their, you know, part of their culture. So yeah, hopefully it's gonna continue. But I think we will see some more withdrawals from those bubbles, because I think, you know, players have been voting with their feet when they've not felt that it's correct. And there's going to be some really interesting moral dilemmas, isn't there? Do I take my $1 million, or do I, you know, do I look after my safety and well-being?
I think that the protocols that are there in place now look pretty solid in terms of the way that they've structured it. As far as I know, the bubble is complete in terms of the staff that are in the bubble with the players are staying with the players, so they're not leaving that bubble, you know, even when they're off duty and stuff like that. So it feels like to me, even that, like, different wings or different levels of hotels for players and the rest of the support staff and stuff like that. So
this is going to be the danger time, right? When everyone's coming in from different places. Absolutely. I feel like these first 2 weeks, I think we touched on it in the IPL preview, that they're going to be a bit disjointed anyway because people are turning up late and we're going to get these COVID outbreaks and things from different areas. So, yeah, kind of probably won't be able to assess who's going well necessarily in the tournament for 3 or 4 weeks maybe.
At least two, possibly 3 weeks, you're right.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the thing that jumps off my page is the one we'll probably spend the most time talking about. We probably won't now just because I've said that. But DRS extension to include the bails. We've talked about this before. So the MCC World Cricket Committee made some recommendations to the ICC Rules Committee. A number of them have been ignored. But the crux of this essentially is that the DRS zone has now been extended to include the bails when previously it stopped at the top of the stump. And then the other component of this is that umpire's call is still staying. So there was some talk around that being removed from the rules. What do we think about this?
Just on the umpire's call, I think they pretty much quoted what Raj said in that chat that we had around that umpire's call was designed to get rid of the very clear error in the, you know, the howler. And that's how they see it viewed, and they see it working very well in that format. So, yeah, I mean, you guys might have other thoughts on the umpire's call, but I think that's exactly right in the way we should be using it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's why we should, umpire's call should still be there, I think. The point I do want to talk about is the widening of the area of the stumps. So correct me if I'm wrong. So that means that the majority of decisions, or more decisions, are likely to remain as they were.
I would think it means there's more chances of being out, isn't it? You've got more space to hit, essentially. If the bails are there, the area where you've got to hit is going to be, you know, however many centimetres that is, that's bigger.
Yes, you're right, Stuart. I think is the sum total is the area that's umpire's call is still the same. It's the width of the ball to the width of the outside of that area. That doesn't change. The area that is out is now ever so slightly bigger.
So you'll get more wickets hitting.
Yes.
And you'll get a same number of umpires' calls, but because the zone's been increased, essentially there's going to be more balls that will hit the stumps and will be out.
So my question is, why is that better? Why is that an improvement?
I'll answer that. I think optically for the casual fan...
Well, is it an improvement, first and foremost?
I think so, purely because the casual fan, it makes it easier for them to understand that there are bails that sit on top of the stumps, and if the batsman wasn't in the way, the ball would have hit those bails. But for reasons unknown, that wasn't included in the DRS zone, and now it is. So a ball that is kind of impacting most of the bails and would normally take the top of off bail completely off and smash it sort of halfway to fine leg is now going to be given out, rather than maybe even umpire's call, and if the umpire's given that not out, then the ball's clearly hitting the top of the wickets and given not out. So from an optics point of view, I think that's a good thing.
So do you know how they're going to do the recalibration if it's too windy and they're not using bails?
That's a great question. I would assume that they would just act as if the bails are still there, even the heavy bails. Here's one that jumped off the page for me.
It's a wonderful question. Raj's got all the questions there.
It's a great question. I'd like to know the last time that the bails were removed in a test match.
Probably Wellington sometime.
Yeah, don't know.
I've got a couple of others that came in that same set of changes or recommendations. The players will be allowed to ask the on-field umpire whether they think a genuine attempt has been made to play a shot before they ask for a review. So hold on,
before we continue your thought there, that happened in the Australia-India test, didn't it, with Blocker Wilson? They asked him, is that a shot? And didn't he say no or yeah? I can't remember which way he went, but he said one way, and then the third umpire overruled them.
Yeah, so my reading of this is that the player will be able to ask that, and the umpire will give them an answer, and then they will review. Mm. So I can only assume that means that the umpire's decision on that then stands.
Yeah, it would have to. It would have to stand.
The third umpire can also now check for a replay of any short runs. Mm. And he will then call and correct that mistake prior to the next ball. So in addition to no balls, they will now check short runs as well.
Is there going to be a siren for that?
Yeah, I hope so. I really do.
I think that making something more out goes away from what we've looked at as cricket for the last 200 years. We've talked about the benefit of the doubt going to the batsman.
But that's never been in the rules.
Correct, but it's been in the spirit. My point is, if we're saying that the technology is not 100% accurate, that the ball is not following the same trajectory as we think it is with the naked eye, why are we making it easier to give batsmen out, or more likely to give a batsman out if we're not sure on that?
So, look, I think that the technology has improved in terms of that predictive element of Hawkeye or whatever product is being used. And to the extent that I believe they actually got MIT professors to speak to the BCCI to talk through the quality of that technology product. So I don't actually have an issue, and I probably side with Baldy in that to the fan that's watching it's going, well, hold on a second, 50% of the ball is smashing the bales off. That's out in any game of cricket that I play on a Saturday afternoon. Why is that not out in an international game?
Probably given not out by the umpire on a Saturday afternoon.
Well, player umps, but yeah. so look, I think, and we had this conversation, I think if they are comfortable with the technology that it's to within 90-odd%, the best umpires don't get 99% of things right. The best umpire, I think, at the moment is Michael Gough. On stats, I'm pretty sure, or it might be Kettlebrand. Either way, he's from Yorkshire. they're saying that the technology is in the high 90%. So for me, let's go with the technology. I'm just disappointed they didn't make some of the other changes. That, let's be honest, that MCC World Cricket Committee, it's not like it's a bunch of Muppets. You've got Brian Lara, you've got Michael Atherton, you've got Raoul Dravid, you've got Anil Kumble, you've got a whole bunch of people on there that are making a suggestion to improve the game, and it's not been taken, which I think is a trick missed.
Interestingly, just before we, do you want to finish? I was just going to say,
the flow-on effect, I think, from making that area wider is you're going to see umpires more likely than they have been in the past to give somebody out. Mm. And that because they don't want their umpire's call overturned. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to have a negative impact when we go to DRS for the batsman.
Yep, I agree. I think the batsmen have kind of been getting away with it for a little while, in that their umpire, that zone previously was too small. And I would argue now that it is the right size. I agree with you that the umpire may give the batsman out more often than he had previously. But then I would urge umpires to look for a reason to give the batsman not out, as all good umpires should. And if they cannot find any reason to give the batsman not out, then they give the batsman out. And that's the same process that every good umpire is taught, is that I must try and find a way to give the batsman not out, and if I can find no reason to give him not out, then I raise my finger. And if the umpires continue to do that, I think we'll see the same high standard of decision-making.
I think the other thing here, and I don't want to sort of side with the two spinners in the room, but you go back 15 years, a guy would get a stride and get hit on the pad in shin-eye in front of middle stump, and an umpire just going, nah, not out. DRS has actually, I think, brought quality spin back into the game, particularly into Test cricket. I mean, oh my goodness me, if DRS had come in a little bit earlier in Shane Warne or Anil Kumble's career, that they'd have probably finished, Murali as well, they'd have probably finished with 1,000 wickets apiece. Mm. So look, I really do think that it has improved the game. It's going to have an impact again. So I think your batting stats are probably going to come down 3 or 4 points, and your bowling stats are probably going to also go down 3 or 4 points.
Yeah.
But look, I think the technology is pretty decent. So let's give it a whirl.
One final note: the ICC has also changed its regulations on replacement players as well. So there is now the unqualified use, and I'm reading this from a Cricket Australia article, in inverted commas, of replacement players in a bid to understand better the implications of concussion and COVID-19. So it looks like for first class cricket, unqualified use of substitutes. You can substitute someone for concussion, COVID-19, whatever you want to do.
Sorry, can you say that one again? So you can what does unqualified mean?
Unqualified use. I don't.
So they can do it because it went past their helmet and they think it hit them in the head. So it's concussion.
I think the term unqualified is if the team claims that they would like to have a substitute, they get it without having to qualify in some way.
How long until they introduce rolling subs?
And do we know whether that's a like for like? Because that's what it had to be previously, wasn't it?
No, like, no other news in this article, but yeah. I shall run it down for you, Adam, and I shall present a full report on the next podcast.
Look, this is just like
that. It's a good point, though.
This is just like that bullshit Big Bash League substitution X Factor rule. At the end of the day, if you're saying Steve Smith has got a head knock, I want to bring in my seventh best batsman, surely as a... an opposition side, you're going to go, yes, sweet, no probs.
Yeah, you're not actually going to use it unless someone is actually damaged in some way.
The danger is that it could be rorted, and there is the perception that it is being rorted, and that's the most damaging thing.
Yeah, it's perception rather than reality.
So, guys, we'll just finish this week in cricket. Ireland getting a test match against Australia in 2022, which is almost as far off as our next IPL preview, to go with their Afghanistan tour in 2021 and 22 as well. So, yeah, good news for some of those associate nations getting test matches against the big boys.
Absolutely. And the sort of further point to that is that it looks like they'll be played in non-traditional test match venues as well. So, areas around Australia that wouldn't ordinarily get a test, maybe Canberra, maybe Townsville, maybe Cairns, maybe even Darwin, places like that might get a test match as well. So a chance for the people that live in those rural and regional areas or our nation's capital to get some test cricket, which is a good thing. And seeing Rashid Khan and Mohammad Nabi and those kind of guys on Australian soil and the island guys as well, fantastic.
So that wraps up this week in cricket. We've gabbed on for nearly as long as Washington Sundar's Gabba-named dog. But we will be back in your feeds very, very shortly to wrap up the New Zealand cricketing summer and a whole host of other stuff as well. Look out for our IPL preview shows as well and lots of interviews coming up in the feed as well. If you do want to find all the details, go to www.thetoporderpodcast.com. You'll find us everywhere you can find reputable and non-reputable podcasts. But for tonight, good night. God bless. Speak to you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.